Hello and welcome to You Really Shouldn't Have, the podcast where we unwrap some of the best stories behind some of the worst gifts that have ever been given. We're here at a bit of a download milestone this week, so I just want to say thank you very much for checking out the show and listening. Continue to follow. I really do appreciate it. You can check the show out, as always, online on Twitter and Instagram at Bad Gifts Pod, as well as the website, which is badgiftspod.com, where we have a brand new feature that I just wanted to let you know about. Under the menu item of Got a Bad Gift Story, not only can you leave a comment about your own bad gift story, and, you know, we read some out on the show before, you can now also record the audio clip yourself, and we can play it. And that's exactly what Ben's done. So here is Ben's bad gift story.
So I have a story to input into one of your shows, if you'd so like to or not. And it's not a very big, amazing story, but it is quite funny. Basically, there's an ex-girlfriend of mine who has a very minimal chance of hearing this show. But it doesn't matter, I suppose, if she does. Basically, I unwrap a present on Christmas Day at their house, and I'm like, oh my God, that's so cool. It's a, it's like an iPod dock, like one of those Boom Blaster iPod dock things. I'm like, oh my God, that's amazing. Like, you shouldn't have. That's so cool. And they're like, yeah, Ben, you do realize we use old boxes for things and put other things inside, you know, to wrap them up for more mystique. It's like, oh, okay. Oh, so it's not an iPod dock. They're like, no. And I open it up and it was a hairbrush. And that was disappointing when you consider that you thought you'd just got like a proper cool, like, iPod dock thing. So I will never wrap people's gifts in boxes of other potential gifts ever, because I understand the emotional trauma that can come from it.
Thanks so much, Ben. So if you'd like to send your own bad gift story in, you can do so by clicking Got a Bad Gift Story on the website, which is badgiftspod.com. Now onto the episode, and joining me this week is film director Elliot Hassler. At just 20 years old, Elliot is the UK's youngest feature film director. He dropped by to discuss the release of his debut feature film, World War II: The Long Road Home, his upcoming film projects, and of course, he unwrapped the story behind the worst gift he's ever been given. So Elliot, thanks so much for joining the show today. It's great to have you here.
Yeah, no worries. Yes, it's good to be here.
So if we go right back to the beginning, where did your interest in scriptwriting and film production first begin?
I suppose it sort of began when I was about 10. I mean, I'd always been into films and stuff growing up and things. But when I was 10, they did this little project at my primary school where we, the whole class took a week off and made a little film. And that was sort of my first experience with ever filmmaking and things. And I was kind of hooked. And then on, and I kind of made little films after that, which got bigger and better, you know, as I kind of improved. And that was kind of how it all started, really.
So you're here to talk about the release of your debut feature film, The Long Road Home, World War II, The Long Road Home. For anyone that hasn't seen anything about the film, give us a brief overview of what it's about.
Yeah, so it's set in World War II, and it's based on my own great-grandfather's wartime experiences. So he was a prisoner of war in Italy, and then he escaped and made this sort of 400-kilometer journey across the country, you know, living with the resistance and invading Germans, things like that. So, I dramatized that into a movie.
Now, I know the production process for this film spanned across a number of years, and you had a lot of locations as well. So how did you find that logistically?
I mean, they always say with independent films, limit the amount of locations you have. I mean, you think about it, like Reservoir Dogs, and I know loads of movies that are small independent, they're in one location, which obviously makes them so much easier when you're filming like that. But I always thought that, you know, it would set me apart massively from everyone else if I did a movie where there's you know, like 100 different locations or whatever. It really sort of changes the dynamic of things and how people view you as a filmmaker and stuff. So I always went at it with kind of an ambitious eye from the start. So, it was something I was prepared to do, and I just kind of worked around that. So it was never too much of a hindrance, really.
I know you filmed it across quite a long time frame. It was a couple of years, wasn't it? You took to film it in total?
Yeah, 3 years, yeah.
Was that tough to go back and forward? Like, I guess there was a long period of gaps between the filming. Was that difficult at all?
It was. I think the longest gap was about 6 months, because I started at 14, finished at 16, so I had like my exams and the school exams in the middle. So I had 6 months off where I finished those. And that was kind of the biggest break. But I don't really remember there being any sort of specific, like, oh, I kind of lost track of it or anything like that. It all kind of flowed nicely. It was all right.
Now, I know during the production process for the film, you wore quite a lot of hats yourself, Elliot. I mean, not only did you write the film and direct it, but you're also the lead actor, you edited the film. I mean, for someone so young, that must have been quite a lot to juggle.
It was actually, yeah. I mean, I think I'll probably take a step back from the acting side of things now and focus more on the directing, which I'm much what I'm doing for my new film that I'm working on at the moment. I'm purely, you know, directing that, but I still write all my own stuff. And I think it's the job of a director to be very hands-on in all different aspects of it, because it's your vision at the end of the day. So yeah, you have to make sure the costumes fit and, you know, the locations look good and everything. You have to really have a finger in each sort of pie, as it were, within the movie making thing.
I guess the upside of that is it did give you a lot of creative control to get the end product that you wanted to achieve when you first started writing it.
Exactly. Yeah, it did. And it also gave me a big overview of, you know, how to deal with each aspect of a production. So, I mean, obviously now I understand quite a lot about all of it, really, from the writing, the production, post-production, all that kind of stuff. So I know how sort of each thing works, which is good, because then it gives me a view of, you know, how other people should be doing their jobs and how I want them to be done and that kind of thing. So I'm able to see what I'm good at and what I can do and then delegate elsewhere. So it did work well in that respect.
Now, I know the film has also already graced a few film festivals. How was that experience, and did it get the reaction you'd hoped for?
Yeah, I mean, the reaction was fantastic, really. So Culture Trip said I was the next Spielberg.
Not too bad.
I mean, it doesn't get much better than that. So yeah, it was good.
Now, you mentioned you're working on your next project, which is a film called Vindication Swim, which tells the story of the first British woman to swim the English Channel. I wondered what drew you to that story in particular.
Yeah, I mean, I've always grown up around the sea and stuff, living in Brighton. My family are sort of, I think, way back, they're sort of descended from fishermen and stuff like that. So I don't know, maybe kind of seafaring stories and stuff is in my blood a bit. But it was a fascinating story, really, about this woman who is kind of two battles, in a sense, because she's fighting against society at the time, being a woman in the 1920s and things. And she's also got this battle against nature, against sort of the cold of the English Channel and the waves and all of that. So there's a lot going on in the story that I think is really tangible and translates itself really nicely into, you know, a dramatized film.
I can imagine the logistics of that being a bit difficult filming on the water. How have you found that? That must be something new for you.
Yeah, it's tough. I mean, we're shooting actually out on the English Channel. It's all real. There was no, you know, we're not filming in a tank of Pinewood or anything like that. It's all done out on the English Channel. So with a wooden boat and, you know, I mean, it's safe. We have support boats and everything out there, but it's tough. Yeah. I mean, nothing really prepares you for what that's going to be like, but you have to just kind of learn on your feet. I mean, literally it's jumping into the deep end.
Now, I know we can't get away from it, but obviously COVID has been such a big thing this year. How have you found that logistically in terms of trying to get this new film off the ground?
Well, we were halfway through shooting actually when the whole thing hit. So that was, it was annoying really, because we had to, you know, stop 3 months. There was like a hiatus on the production and stuff. So there was nothing going on, but in terms of filming, but it was good in a way, because we were halfway through production. So we were able to sit back and, you know, reflect on what we'd done and really sort of refine the script. And we added a few new scenes and things like that. So in a way, it was quite nice, because we really got to sit and sort of study what we'd done in the middle of production, which you'd obviously never normally get to do.
I wanted to touch briefly on another of your short films that I had the opportunity to take a look at, which is called To Hunt a Tiger. I mean, some of the cinematography in that film is absolutely breathtaking. Just tell me a bit about the process of putting that one together.
Oh, thanks. Yeah, I mean, that was done a couple of years ago, yes. Yeah. So I've always been a big fan of David Lean and his films. I mean, he's sort of my biggest influence as a filmmaker. So on that one, I mean, we actually shot in one of the locations from Bridge on the River Kwai and stuff. So it was really nice. It's kind of a nice little homage to David Lean and his films and stuff with that one. So, I mean, that is the kind of look I go for, that epic, you know, widescreen Panavision, that type of thing. That's what I like and what I strive for.
So obviously, as we've said, next up you've got Vindication Swim. But looking further ahead, what is next for you in your career?
Well, I don't know. I mean, I'm so involved in this Vindication Swim at the moment. We've gained momentum again since COVID and stuff, so we've been really busy. But we'll see where this goes. I mean, the aim is to have this premiere in Cannes at the festival in 2022. So we'll have to just see what happens there.
Now, we've reached the part of the show where I have to ask you, what is the worst gift you've ever been given?
The worst gift. Yeah, I had to think about this. I think the worst gift I've ever been given was I once got given one of those, you know, those little airsoft BB gun type things. Yeah. I got given one of those and I shot my eyebrow off with it, like part of my eyebrow off. So, I mean, if that was an inch lower, I mean, my career would be ruined. I'd have shot my eye out. So that would have to be probably the worst gift I've been given. Yeah. Cause it could have been a lot worse.
It could have been much worse, but we're glad it wasn't, Elliot. We're glad it wasn't.
Yeah, I'm glad my eyebrow grew back. So that, I mean, that's fine.
Wrapping up, it seems like a strange question to ask someone so young. Normally, I ask everybody, if you could go back to the beginning of your career and give yourself a gift to help to get where you are now, what gift would it be? But it seems, you know, your career is only just beginning. So perhaps if we go back to 14-year-old Elliot writing the first draft of the new film, what gift would you give that Elliot to help to get to where you are at the moment?
Ooh, that's a good question. I don't know. I don't feel like I have the wisdom yet to answer that sort of thing. But I suppose I would go back and, you know, give myself maybe a book on screenwriting or something. Because one of the issues sort of with that, when I first started, because the script sort of didn't really exist on that one, it kind of got, it was evolving constantly throughout the production. So I think, you know, having done other films since, I like having a cohesive script where you know what you're doing and it's everything's sort of fleshed out in there. I mean, obviously things change, but to have that backbone, I find really useful. So yeah, I think I would go back and kind of give myself instruction on the screenwriting.
Fantastic. And finally, Elliot, where can people find out more about you and what you do?
Yes, they can follow me on social media and whatever. And there's Relsar Productions is the company that I make the films through. So that's my surname backwards, by the way. So
oh, okay.
They can check through that. Yeah.
Well, Elliot, it's been great to have you on the show. Thanks so much for dropping by. And best of luck with the film.
Cheers.
Thanks again for listening to this episode of You Really Shouldn't Have. Be sure to subscribe to us on your chosen podcast service to make sure you never miss another episode. You can also find us on Twitter and Instagram @BadGiftsPod, as well as online @badgiftspod.com.